Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. There it goes.
Are you looking to take your social technology strategies to the next level? Then do we have a show for you. Social Geek Radio co-hosts AK Stout and Deb Evans chat weekly with innovative technology folks who share their experiences, tips, and tricks to help you take your business to the next level. Social Geek Radio is brought to you by Saying It Social and Deb Evans Consulting, LLC. To learn more about their unique services, including but not limited to speaking, consulting, and training, visit AK Stout and DebEvansConsulting.com.
Oh, it's AK, it seems like it's been forever since we've been here.
Yeah, but not forever since we've communicated, since we get to see each other last week.
This is true. This is true. So this is Deb Evans coming to you live from Houston and welcoming. We've got a lot of guests here that are waiting to be introduced, and I'm looking at the chat. There's people in the chat room. I see we have our usual callers that call in. Used to be in Texas, and now they're in Florida. So it's Social Geek Radio Night. How are you, AK?
I'm doing well. A little hot for my liking here in the good old Baltimore area today, but otherwise, well, can't complain.
Can't complain. And I know the social streams have been really busy with everything that was going on in Oklahoma, so we should go ahead and mention that, you know, our thoughts are with all those folks, but I love seeing all the charities and all the recognition about the events and how we can help, you know, with the Red Cross. So really awful.
Yeah.
So we were in Atlanta last week.
We were. And that was awesome. I had a great time at Grand Camp.
It was good. It was action-packed and filled. But why don't we have a story we wanted to share with everybody before we start talking about Fran Camp and get our guest in. So the show before Fran Camp, we talked about conference prep, how to promote your event using social media. And we talked about hashtags and how do you use the hashtag properly for an event. But we had a little hashtag hijacking going on during Fran Camp.
Yes,
so
social media drama.
yes. And you know, and it was. And so there's unwritten etiquette, I guess you would say, on using hashtags or social media, because I don't know. Is there maybe that should be the book that we write, Social Technology Etiquette.
Right. Yeah, so if you're gonna have an event and you want to have a hashtag where everybody can use the same hashtag to talk about what they're learning during the event, speakers can use it, participants at the conference, the attendees can use it. The best thing to do before the event and some months or weeks leading up to the event is decide exactly what that hashtag is going to be. Because you don't want to use a hashtag that other people are using, because you don't want to get your conversation sort of commingled with other conversations going on with that hashtag. So you can use a site like IRC's Topsy, TOPSY.com, because you can actually search on Topsy through Twitter and Google+. So if you come up with what you want your hashtag to be, based on some combination of, you know, what your conference is called, you would want to go to the site, type it in, and see if anybody is using it. If you can see that it's in use, you know, best practices would just suggest that you pick something else until you find something that people aren't using. There isn't a universal hashtag registry. So it's not like we all know that we should go to one site and see if anybody has registered a hashtag. There is a site that I'll talk about on Geek It Out that I've found since then where you can register a hashtag, and there are a couple of other smaller ones. But again, it's not something that everybody knows about, so everybody would be checking again. So you decide you're going to use the hashtag. And again, the premise is that the people who are attending the conference are using it to talk to one another. Of course, and we've seen this with the conferences that we've gone to, and I've done it myself, even if you can't be at the conference, you can still participate in the conversation by, you know, retweeting what other people at the conference are saying to reshare that information with your network. And you can also use it, you know, just to, maybe you want to ask a question of the speaker and, you know, maybe get that on the radar in some way. But the point is, even though you may not be at the conference, you're still participating in the relevant conversations that are occurring around what's happening at the conference. So for FranCamp, I was live tweeting FranCamp, and I was trying to also create an archive at the same time. So pretty much the entire time, I had the live stream open of anybody using the FranCamp hashtag so that I could pull everything that was, you know, really great and relevant into the archive that I was creating. So as I'm doing this, and even the day before the conference, I noticed that there was this organization, or this, it's like a new site, that started using the hashtag, but they weren't really contributing to the conversation or talking about the conference in any way. From what I could tell, they were just putting links to articles from their website into essentially our feed using the hashtag. So it was just the title of an article, the URL back to their site, and then the hashtag that we were using. And the news organization, their audience, I could tell, just based on the name of the organization, was the franchise community. So what they were doing was essentially using the hashtag because they knew all of these people in the franchise community were going to be looking at this hashtag to get their content in front of this audience. So in theory, they're doing good target. They're doing good target marketing. I don't really want to use the word good, but they're getting their content in front of the right audience, but they were doing it in the wrong way at the wrong time. Because what happened was, I mean, if it had just been one here and one there, and, you know, one a couple of hours later, that would have been one thing. I wouldn't have had a huge issue with it. But at one time, they sent like 20 different articles back to back to back to back to back, and it was ridiculous. It took up the whole feed. Had we been having a screen at FranCamp where the Twitter feed was going so that everybody could see the tweet, it would have looked horrible right in the middle of the Twitter feed. So people started talking about it and got really irritated with it. And it really just wasn't appropriate. So we tried to figure out if, in fact, they were at the conference and maybe they just didn't understand how to use the hashtag. And we found out who was behind it, and we asked them if they could stop. And really, really long story short, they just didn't want to. They thought that people wanted to read their articles during breaks and such, and, you know, clearly that they were saying one thing and doing another thing because there was no way somebody was going to read 30 articles in the middle of a 15-minute break that we were having. But the moral of the story is, you know, that was a really negative thing that occurred. They were trying to get in front of people, and again, they were just doing it at the wrong time. So it put a really bad taste in people's mouths instead of the effect that they wanted to, instead, you know, getting traffic to their website. So you have to make sure. It seems pretty common sense that you just wouldn't do that, but apparently people do that. So just make sure if you see a hashtag around an event or something that a lot of people are participating in, that if you are going to use it, that you are being relevant to the conversations that are happening, you're providing value along with what's actually happening at the conference at that time.
I agree. And then as a conference host or coordinator, I did politely ask them to not use it the way that they were using it those 2 days, and suggested very politely to hold off and then use the hashtag again after the conference was done. And they returned the favor with a not so polite email that they didn't understand what my problem was. So it's like, oh. So anyway, so that's hashtag hijacking, but I do see a blog post and more content on that. So that was the negative. So now the positive about FranCamp, we have our wonderful guests that are going to join us tonight. Lisa Harrison, Senior Vice President of Communications at IFA. We're also joined by Susan King. And is it Glosby? Susan? Oh, did I lose Susan? Is she no longer on the line? I think we've lost Susan. She'll have to call back in. She's with Stroller Strides or Fit for Mom. And Paul Segretto with Franchise Foundry. So I'll have to see if I can find Susan and get her back on the line. So, Alisa, how are you tonight?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm good. I just have to figure out where Susan went to and see if I can find out how to get her back on. I don't know. I don't know where she went. We have quite a few callers here, and I'm afraid to start opening up phone lines. That could get quite interesting. It could be our hijacker could be on. That wouldn't be good. Oh, that could be really interesting. So anyway, Alisa, tell us more about your position at IFA and how what did you think about Frank Camp and the sessions and the keynotes that we had?
Well, first of all, I was just ecstatic about Frank Camp and really, really enjoyed working with you and the entire task force to put it together. I think when you understand how quickly we put the program together and saw how robust the program was and how attentive the attendees were, I think that everyone would agree that it was a keeper. And definitely, I think, a program that is going to just continue to get more and more relevant for, you know, the franchise industry. And that excites me because what I do at the IFA is I try to promote, protect, and enhance franchising, both to external audiences, people, you know, within who aren't within the industry, and kind of talk to them about the economic importance of franchising and why it's such a unique business model, why it's so important to our country and really, you know, the global marketplace. But also helping our members, you know, grow their businesses. And digital technology, marketing technology is clearly where it's at today for our members who are not only trying to communicate with consumers about their product or their systems, but also as they're trying to find those prospects out there, people who are going to be the future franchise owners. So from that perspective, I think that the programming that we had at Fran Camp that talked about social marketing and a lot of the you know, ways when we had keynote speakers from Google and from Yelp, they talked to the audience about how to really delve into using some of these platforms to market their program. But we also talked about, you know, the darker side of technology, and that's security and how, you know, how best to secure your databases and that sort of thing, and what to do in case you do have a data breach. So I think it really ran the gamut from A to Z, and I just couldn't have been more pleased. And thank you guys for all your help in helping us put that together.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. And IFA and the team at IFA, you know, it takes a village, family, and it was so many of you putting this together and making sure that everything, you know, would run smoothly. So it was exciting.
Yeah, it was great. I'm ready to do it again. I don't know if I can wait 365 days.
And before we go, we're going to talk about the next Frank Camp. So yeah. I think I have Susan back on the line. Susan, are you with me?
Hi, Deb. Yes, I am.
I don't know what happened. But anyway, you're back. So I don't know if you could hear us, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us more about your role in the franchise that you work with. And there's a name change with your franchise. So and what you thought about Frank Camp.
Absolutely. So Susan Glosby, and I am VP of Operations for Fit for Mom. Our name change just happened in Q1 of this year. We have been known as Stroller Strides for the past 12 years, and our repertoire of our fitness classes for moms has definitely expanded beyond the stroller. So we've done an umbrella brand of Fit for Mom, and so we encompass Stroller Strides, Fit for Baby, and Body Back classes. And so pretty exciting move for us as a franchisor. So as far as my role within Fit for Mom is, I've developed into the IT expert and the figuring out our systems for our franchisees, and so we don't have an IT department, so it's definitely I've become the Jill of all trades, but it's been really exciting because we've had some big technology moves over the past since January in what we provide to our franchisees. So my reason for going to Frank Camp was really to see what other franchisors were doing, and also to share our story of moving to Google Apps and moving to some mobile systems, because our franchise is about mobile. It's a mobile business product, and so we wanted our franchisees to be able to really operate their business from anywhere. So that's the reason for me going to FranCamp, and it was great, and it was really exciting to meet so many other people who are really doing a lot around you know, mobile solutions and what to do about mobile websites and all of that great stuff.
Yeah, and you moderated a great panel. I couldn't sit in on yours. I know I popped in really quick, but I heard some wonderful feedback about the panel and the information that you guys provided.
Great.
Yeah, and all of the presentations, and Paul, I'm going to get to you in just a second, all the presentations are available. We've put the links out there. They're on Fran Social. There's a link on the Facebook page of Fran Camp, and we've tweeted it, and it's, you know, if you go to franchise.org, you're going to be able to find it. So I can't imagine that anybody can't find those presentations. They're out there. So Paul Segretto with Franchise Foundry is with us as well tonight, a fellow Texan. Would you consider yourself a Texan, Paul?
I don't know. I've lived here way longer than I have in New York, and all four of my kids were born here, and I would say, absolutely not. I'm still a New Yorker. I'm sorry.
There you go. I knew. Thank you. I didn't realize all your kids were born here. So,
yes.
we're in Texas. So a fellow Texas resident. So tell us about Franchise Foundry and your role, and then you've been involved with social for, seems like, forever.
Yeah, I've been involved with social for probably going on 6 years right now. Franchise Foundry is a small franchise development and private equity firm. We currently own either outright or have a invested interest in four brands, as well as we fully manage and develop six other brands, primarily in some specific industry spaces, including children's franchises, fitness education and educational home product and services. And we're proud to announce that as of May 1st, we purchased in an acquisition the Curtain Exchange, a home decor franchise. And we also get involved in some unique QSR. Some of you might have seen one of our brands, Sub-Zero Ice Cream, on Shark Tank earlier this year. And, of course, my role with Franchise Foundry is CEO and president, and that was after a merger with my company, Franchise Essentials, which a lot of listeners probably remember. That occurred at the end of 2012, and our primary focus was on franchise marketing with a specific focus on social technology. So, yeah, and also I am the host of another Blog Talk radio show that Deb has been on several times, Franchise Today, Thursdays at 11 a.m. Central Time. And, of course, yes, I did. I was involved in the first Brand Camp, Deb. I remember us being in Nashville a little bit more than 2 years ago. I remember it was it was very, very cold. And, of course, leaving Texas, I showed up with sandals on, thinking, okay, great, it's going to be warm, right? Yeah, it was 37 degrees, I think, the morning of Frank Camp. And it's really interesting to see how it's evolved. I think back then we had 30 or 40 people, and it was very workshop-focused this year. To see it, you know, blow up to a complete conference that I think will rival any other conference and will not be looked at as a trial type of conference within the franchise circuit. I think it's definitely here to stay. Certainly, as I sit on the IFA Technology Committee, I'm proud of the event, and I look forward to seeing it expand and becoming even more robust as more people know about it.
Yeah, now, AK, and you were at the first Fran Camp in Nashville. So that Fran Camp had a little karaoke going on. We didn't have a karaoke bar at this one.
Oh, darn. I was really
you forgot about that. Yeah, but we did have a networking event. So the tweet up, which I – and I, we talked about when we're talking about events and preparing for events, I think most events today, and I'll ask this of all of you, you know, the conferences that you attend, do you find that most of them have some sort of social networking event that, you know, during or before, and sometimes they're called a tweet up, sometimes it's called a meet up. Alisa, do you, what do you think when you go to conferences? And
yeah, I definitely think, and certainly the IFA events, you know, ours tend to be, you know, large numbers, and it's certainly become, it's still relatively new, but I think it's becoming more the norm as the social community starts to use it and just starts to implement it wherever they go. And as I go to other conferences, you know, outside of franchising, I see the same. You know, other industries, other people are starting to use it more and more. I don't know if it's if I would call it mainstream yet, but I see it quickly becoming mainstream.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why it's not completely mainstream is that there's still a large number of executives, and specifically within franchising, that might not even be active in social media circles and therefore might not even be aware it's going on. That being said, Deb, of course, you know, we go back to San Antonio, and Fred DeLuca, the CEO and founder of Subway, goes up at the tweet up and wants to know all about Twitter, which was really, I think, groundbreaking for franchise type of social media. So until more and more executives realize they need to be within social media, I don't think it'll be completely mainstream, but certainly accepted. Accepted as well as expected by many.
Yeah, and Paul, I guess I would add, I mean, one thing I was really pleased to see at FranCamp, I mean, we had people from across the spectrum there. We had quite a few CEOs there that stayed there and attended every one of the sessions, which I think surprised me a little bit. We had people from, you know, the managerial level to the C-suite level to the operations level to the, you know, technology level to the legal level. It was really a very, it was a great cross of people from the franchise industry, and I think that just goes to show how this area is really touching every single part of a franchise company, and I think we're just going to see that grow more and more.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, this is Susan. I would agree with that as well. And it was great to see that there were so many people who are not necessarily doing that day-to-day social media for their particular company, but they see it as it's so important that they really need to learn more about it and be in that space.
And we can't forget the suppliers as well. I mean, we had a fair amount of suppliers that were at FranCamp, some not as social as others, and anybody that's working within the franchise industry or any industry as a supplier or part of the industry themselves, if you're not social, then you're missing out on a big opportunity to get to know folks. And they were, I watched so many people, too, during FranCamp, getting the opportunity to meet what we say in IRL, to meet in real life. You miss that when you're on a social network all the time and you're looking at these tweets, like I'm watching Matthew's tweets now, and we got to meet in real life, or Deb Dobson, who is in Atlanta, not part of the franchise industry, but saw us posting on Google Plus about FranCamp, and come to find out, she no longer is in Kansas. She was two blocks away, and AK and I had never met Deb in person, but she was on Social Geek Radio like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so it was fun. There's just so many opportunities when you're meeting, you know, when you have these events that you just have to take advantage of all of the possibilities of getting together.
It definitely makes the world a lot smaller.
I agree.
And I think that, and not to kind of get off topic a little bit, but I think that was one of the impetus why our committee and our board wanted to create Fran Social, which is the 24/7 online community that said that you don't have to just wait for an event to engage with people or to, as you said, meet in real life, that you can keep it going. There's a forum that's there every day. And that's really what the vision, the vision is, Deb, is to have that kind of engagement with people and get to know them when you might not otherwise get to know them. So we have big hopes for that as well.
So I have a question for everybody. Do you think that the majority, and let's stick with franchising, do you think the majority of the franchise industry on France Social or on Twitter or on LinkedIn or more, let me see what I want to say, are will communicate faster on the computer versus sitting in a networking event or a conference and sitting next to people? You know, is the franchise industry as social online as they are in person, or are they more social in person versus online?
I think it's kind of split. I mean, if you ever met, you know, Kim from Red Mango, the CEO, I've tweeted with him numerous times. I remember the last time I was at the West Coast Franchise Expo, I didn't even realize he was there and saw him on Twitter. And when I went by the booth, he was literally hunched in the corner tweeting away. And he prefers to have that digital separation as opposed to talking in person. So I think some of that has to do with their own personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, when you think about the franchise community in general, I'm not just talking about the IFA community, it's a very close network anyway. There's something about franchising that brings people together. That's why people say they go to our annual convention, because they want to network. So I think the the social part of it, the online social part, engagement, really just adds to it. And I think it provides an opportunity for more people to be engaged in that conversation. So I see them both kind of feeding off of each other.
And Susan, what about your particular brand?
For us, I mean, so from a franchising perspective, what I've seen is definitely there's more and more involvement on social media, which is great, but I also agree that those in-person networking events and conferences are really where you solidify those relationships. Our franchise specifically, we are marketing to moms, and moms are on Facebook, and that's where, you know, our franchisees, they need to be on Facebook. That's where a lot of their marketing is happening, and us as a franchisor, you know, a lot of our sales leads, honestly, are coming through social media. It's about Facebook, and it's about Twitter, and it's about being where our potential buyers are and being where our participants are.
And going back to the France Social comment that Elisa brought up, I think what I've seen is now that folks have met each other in person and they're comfortable because they spent 2 days sitting side by side at the sessions at FranCamp, I see those conversations now moving over to France Social, so that, you know, it will keep that momentum going and people are more comfortable if they weren't before, to post those questions and get that conversation going. So I hope France Social just really takes off.
Well, and it's great having all those virtual relationships, because then you actually meet so many, like you guys, for example. Deb, I've talked to you on the phone a few times, but you and AK, we've been connecting on Twitter for a couple of years now, and that was the first time I actually get to meet you, both of you, which was fantastic. And our franchise conferences are much the same, because we have our owners that have all these virtual relationships, and, you know, it's once a year they actually get to hug each other and talk face-to-face, so it's really awesome.
Jeff, the one thing I'd like to bring up is that whether it be France Social or Facebook or Twitter or whatever platform it is, you're going to find, and I've seen this for the last 6 years as this evolved, people will congregate and kind of move towards the their favorite platform. I know I've got some that I have only communicated with on Facebook. And believe it or not, some of those are franchise attorneys that I have never been able to communicate with them any other way, and it's actually hard to get them on the phone, and yet we communicate quite regularly on Facebook. There are some that, you know, love LinkedIn, and I get, in, you know, private messages from them all the time on LinkedIn. And then, of course, you know, some of them are more mainstream on Twitter. So I would recommend to the listeners, you know, definitely don't, you know, push aside one because you think that there's not a lot of activity there. There's activity on all of them, and you will find that you will be able to pull out those people on each of those. You're probably going to do 80% of your communicating on one platform, but don't rule out the others because there might be some very valuable contacts there that will only communicate within that space virtually.
Well, and it's funny, as a former franchisor, you know, and Susan, I know, you know, you, everybody knows this, you get very comfortable with your franchisees and you know how they like to communicate. As Paul pointed out, I would have franchisees and they would only send text messages. And as you said, some will send direct messages via Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or email. And as a franchisor, you have to adapt. You just have to, you know, this is where their comfort level is, and this is how they like to communicate. And it's just their personalities. And prospects coming into a franchise system, they're the same way. It's like, okay, how do they mm-hmm. want you to communicate with them? So it's like, okay, I'm going to adapt a text message with this one. And it's, your data bank in your head just becomes, okay, Michelle likes this, and Deb likes this, and Ronnie likes this. It's like, okay, I can juggle all those platforms. But anything at FranCamp, did any one of you pick up or learn that really took you by surprise, that was totally new? Whether it's from the keynote speakers or one of the sessions?
Well, I definitely think that the editor of Wired Magazine UK blew everybody away. That was one of the best presentations I have ever seen. And I think there was just so much there that I think there are probably more questions that came out of that than were answered going into it.
David, he was very good. He was very entertaining. It's a good presentation.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with Paul. I think it just got, you know, you just left that, you left it, just your mind was racing, like, oh my gosh, what is this world that we're getting ready to live in? But I also, and again, I really, more that the drier part of all of this, but I was really fat. I sat in on a lot of legal discussions, and with all of this new great technology and new ways to communicate, really does come a lot of challenges that any industry has to face, whether it's, you know, protecting your data, but also you know, making sure that you're aware of all the legal ramifications. So I think that's definitely an area that, you know, we have to share with the industry a lot more information, because you don't want to get caught up in, you know, you don't want to be the Debbie Downer on some of this stuff, but it can definitely derail you. And I think the more you know up front as you're building your programs, the better. So that was something that really kind of opened my eyes, the breadth of what could go wrong.
Well, I think one thing, Deb, that we could unilaterally say across the board, finally, without absolutely any hesitation is, and people out there listen to this, social media is not a fad. Can we finally agree with that? You know, thinking about what was said about there's more mobile phones than toothbrushes in the world.
And that was funny.
Yeah. And then another 5 billion users will be on mobile phones, what was it, in the next few years from
years.
Today. It's unbelievable statistics to even begin to think about this. And across the various, you know, platforms, whether it be, you know, PCs, laptops, netbooks, iPhones, or tablets, we're in a very mobile society. I know a lot of the mobile technology that's used in third world countries, we're not even beginning to use yet, obviously, because the smartphone is a little bit more reasonably priced there than a computer. They use it for banking every day and a host of other things, and we're probably a little bit behind them still. It's going to change so much more than it is today. So I definitely recommend, if you're not completely committed, you better be now, because you're going to have a hard time catching up moving forward.
And we were talking about, talking about the mobile devices in one of the sessions, and I think it was Kevin Johnson, but somebody was talking about, you know, how many devices do you use at one time? Now, AK's on the call, and she is certainly a multitasker. And so, AK, you had a little techie area set up. You were using your laptop, were using your phone and an iPad all at the same time?
Yes, that actually was very helpful because, as I mentioned before, I was trying to really archive all the tweets, and my laptop kept dying. So I was at least able to not miss a beat by having everything up and turned on. But I would be doing, something on my laptop, but wanting to make sure that I was maintaining looking at the feed on my iPad, and then look for Twitter. So I think it's the easiest for me to use Twitter on my phone. So if I needed to tweet something real quick, instead of switching back and forth from my screen, since I had my phone to use for that. So I use kind of each one for a different purpose.
Yep.
Well, hopefully next year, AK, you'll have Google Glass, so you won't have to worry about that.
Don't tease me like that, Paul.
Yeah, I don't know about the Google Glass. I'm sure I would like to test it out. One of the things that I thought was fun, and I wish I had thought of it, but Beige Anderson with E.H. Anderson PR, uses Vine, and I use Vine a little bit. I like to scan the room and say, who's here. I loved what Beige did with two or three Vine, I don't know what you call them, Vine postings, where he said the faces of Fran Camp, and he used Vine to take quick pictures or whatever you call them, to do the faces of Fran Camp. I thought that was pretty interesting. I wish they were a little bit longer, but it captured, a little bit of the crowd that was attending Fran Camp. So it was a nice thing that I want to try to remember when I go to the next conference is post several of those.
Yeah, that was neat. And as we heard from, I forget her name, a girl that was sitting at our table at lunch, that those Vine videos were popping right up in the feed. So they were opened, and they were playing right away. So they had a very, very good visibility in the feed as well.
Yeah, and we know we need to be very, we need to watch our feeds and what's going to capture SEO. So I'm just curious if anyone thinks, what's going to be after Vine? Because Vine hasn't been out that long.
If I knew, I'd become a millionaire overnight.
Probably. I mean, who would have thought Yahoo would be spending $1.1 billion for Tumblr? So,
exactly.
Right.
I got to come up with the next big thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know that stat that was shared about when talking about video, of the stat that the gal from Google shared, that 72 hours is uploaded to YouTube every minute, that there's 72 hours of content on YouTube uploaded every single minute. And so just think about it, just during this hour show, there's thousands of hours of YouTube that has been uploaded. That was astounding to me.
Yeah, I love video. You can capture so much of video. Of course, I put a tons of video on my personal Facebook page. But something that I remember, and I think it was Jenna from Google that had talked about, is placing the phone numbers in a paid mobile ad on Google and how it increases the chances of connecting. And I don't run Google ads that much, but she was giving us lots of little tips of what to put on those ads so that you can make sure that you capture that audience.
Especially when they're on a mobile device. If you think about the real estate on a mobile phone, if your Google ad has the phone number and has all those elements to it, you've got the top half of that real estate.
Yep. Trying to think of some of the other presenters and tips that we picked up. We had Kevin Johnson.
Deb, you mentioned about, you asked, what's the next big thing coming down the pike? And I think the key here is, especially listening to Jenna's presentation at Google, is, pretty much, whatever Google's going to come up with next and how they interface and integrate everything together. I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg as to the capabilities and the creativity and imagination of Google. And then, of course, I think you're going to see Facebook following suit. And I think we're just scratching the surface, honestly.
I agree. I know we don't want to. There was mention, and I've heard this more than once, and I don't remember who brought this one up, but following the 80-20 rule when you're posting on social media. I thought it was you.
That was me. Yeah, I mentioned that in the segment on customer engagement. Yeah, one of the things that we do in a lot of our social media activity is get away from brand regurgitation and realize it, and Susan will definitely appreciate this, dealing with moms and mommy bloggers. It really is about them. It's about the target audience. And we have found that the more that the information is relevant, pertinent, and targeted to that target audience, we get them coming back day after day after day, almost as if your Facebook page is their own little portal of information. And then 20% of what we like to do then is talk about the brand, about specials or whatever. And we have found that they really like that. We're flattered when they come back and say, we come back to your page every day because it's always got, you know, one or two key stories that resonate well with us. And then, of course, we sneak in the information about the brand. So that's part of the 80-20 rule.
And somebody mentioned text messaging clubs, and I'm trying to recall
what that was
about.
Yeah, that was also in customer engagement, and it was, I believe, Mike from Smoothie Cafe.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the company. But, yeah, they have text messaging clubs, and he's actually finding it more valuable than even Facebook pages.
What's a text message club?
I could totally
go ahead.
I was just going to say, because I signed up to a whole bunch of those. Basically, and there's a smoothie place near me that does it, but you usually text like a 5-digit number and you opt in. So it'll tell you like a keyword to say so that you can opt into their text message program. And every time they have like a special or something they want to tell you about, they send you a text message. And really, if you think about it in terms of open rates, I mean, how often do you get a text message on your phone and you don't look at it? So in terms of visibility, I mean, everybody's going to look at that text message. And if you're offering some sort of deal or discount code, you know, that's even better. I mean, that's a better open rate than email marketing. That's a better chance than somebody seeing your post in their Facebook feed. It's awesome. So I opt into them so it's not spam or anything because I know that I have volunteers to receive these messages. And it's businesses that I like and that I frequent. So if it's a deal or a discount, I usually do take advantage of them. So I think they're really effective.
Yeah, and they're in real time. That's what he said really works. So right. They can do it strategically. If it's a slow day, if it's a rainy day, I mean, they could put out specific messages in real time as opposed to on Facebook where they have to wait for somebody to actually go back and look at it. People will, even though they can do that on their iPhone, people are going to look at the text message immediately.
Well, so I guess I do participate in a club because my eye doctor sends me text messages when my contacts come in or reminds me of my appointment, but they did send me a text message when it was my birthday, too. It's like, oh, look, I got a text message for a happy birthday from my eye doctor.
Wow.
There was also a suggestion about using text messaging for your franchisee communications too, that if there's an emergency or, you know, there's something, some big announcement that franchisees need to know right away, that there was also that suggestion of having your franchisees on a text message list so that you could get them, you know, immediate information. And like AK said, is, you know, when was the last time that you ignored a text message on your phone? Mm-hmm. You're gonna look at that first.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, saying that it could be a text message that's just as simple as, hey, check your email, you know, because people aren't checking their email as often as they're looking at their text.
Right.
So are we just saying that email is dead? Is that what we're saying?
Oh, no.
I don't think it's dead as of yet, but I think it's not used as much by the younger generation. So I think it's days, although we're still a ways from that, I do think it's days are numbered because we're going to slowly see that transgression away from it. And I feel the same way about websites, but that's a whole other story for another day.
I can't say I would be terribly disappointed if I got fewer emails.
Yeah, I have to remember that, okay.
No, but, well, I mean.
I'm just kidding.
I bet you can't find me.
No, I can always find you. So, and then AK knows that text messaging doesn't really work for me when I'm walking because I like to walk a lot. So I send voice messages. So I love my smartphone. So smart. I'll just record a voice memo and just pop it off in a text message to her so that I can get more said. More than 140 characters.
Good to know. Good to know.
Oh, I love voice. And especially when I'm driving, too, because you should not text when you drive. I probably shouldn't record a voice message when I'm driving, but it's easy just to click and to record it, and then when I stop, I send it.
Yeah, but I was going to say, at least that's predominantly hands-free.
That's why you need Google Glass.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe we can get somebody to let us test Google Glass, and we'll take it. We promise to take it to the next Frank Camp, which brings up the conversation. Elisa, do you think we're going to have it? We will have another Frank Camp, and it'll be around the same time of year next year?
Yes, 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 and yes. We definitely will have one. I think, you know, we're just waiting to get our evaluations back. We did do kind of an analysis of people who attended this year and kind of where they came from. They really were from all around the country. So, you know, I just think we just need to get the task force together and set the date and location ASAP so we can start building the program. But I think that at least from our standpoint in the IFA leadership, we were so pleased with it that absolutely there will be another one.
Yay!
And I hope that's good news. And I do think that once, you know, doing stuff like your show and all of the marketing and all of the reporting back of what we're doing, I think that's just going to continue to create the excitement. We're putting, you know, we had a lot of discussions videotapes are going to be available on Fran Social for people who weren't able to be there can watch those. But I think the more we tell people through Franchising World and all of our other vehicles about what happened there, I think it's just going to create the excitement, and I definitely think the attendance will be even higher next year. So, of course, I'm always an optimist, but I just can't see how it could not increase after this year. So.
Well, and the content changes. You know, the three Frank Camps that we've had, they've been very different because technology changes. So.
Exactly.
And I can't imagine anybody that will say, oh, I've gone to Frank Camp, I don't need to go again. I would go again. I mean, we can be hosting it, and I would go again because there's always something to learn, you know, once you attend a Frank Camp, as you would go to every, you know, IFA convention. So, AK, I think it's about time that we do a Geek It Out segment. Are you going to be ready?
I am ready.
You are ready. So, Lisa and Susan and Paul, thank you so much for joining us. You can hang on if you'd like and listen to the Geek It Out. But before we go, why don't each of you give us the best way to reach you socially, whether it's on LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And Paul, why don't we start with you?
Well, you pretty much could find me on any social media, but probably the easiest way is on Twitter at Paul Segretta.
Okay. And Susan, how should our audience find you?
Same. Twitter would be great. It is at S Glosby, so S-G-L-O-S-B-Y.
And it's Glosby. I'll have to practice that. And Elisa, how should the audience reach you?
Two ways. Fran Social, which is the IFA member-only community, and then LinkedIn, Elisa Harrison.
Very good. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for being part of Frank Camp and everything that you did for Frank Camp and then hanging with us tonight, and we're going to move into Geek It Out and see what AK has to share with us tonight, and let's see if I can find our geek music. I found it.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right.
I'm ready.
So the first fight I'll talk about will piggyback off of the discussion we had earlier about the hijacking of the hashtag. So when I was looking it up, because I did write a blog post about the whole ordeal. So I tweeted it out, and one of my followers on one of my accounts wrote back and said that she knew that somebody had registered a hashtag somewhere. And so I found out what that site was. And yes, you could register a hashtag, as I mentioned. There are some little sites where you can do that. But again, it's not sort of globally recognized. But I did just run a search just to see what else is out there like that. And I stumbled upon this site. It's called Twubs. So it's TWBS.com. So TWBS.com. And this site says many things. You can actually view and participate in a hashtag chat or a Twitter chat. So, for instance, when you log in, if you just search for the Social Geek Radio hashtag at the top, it will give you a live feed of that tweet, and then you can post a message using that hashtag or participate in that conversation right from the screen. It'll show you who the contributors are. So it'll show you everybody on the right-hand side there who is using that hashtag. And then you can do what's called join the twub, which I think when people start using it, you might get some sort of email digest as to what's occurring with that hashtag. But the component that I was particularly curious about during FranCamp was the ability to register a hashtag. So at the top of the site, you'll see a link that says register hashtag, and you just input your hashtag, and you click register hashtag, and you walk through a series of prompts. And I was actually able to customize a header, so I could put the FranCamp kind of banner up at the top. I was able to add links, so I made it such that over on the right-hand side, there were links to the main FranCamp information registration page, FranCamp on Facebook. I was able to put a link to the archive I created, and even to the Twitter list that we created for attendees and sponsors. So for anybody who's interested in checking out right now, you can go to twubs.com/FranCamp, or you could just search for the hashtag FranCamp in the search bar at the top, so you can see the header. The other neat thing about this is that it gives you a tool to embed. So if you click on the embed link on the right-hand side of the feed, you could actually take the code and you could put it up in your in the sidebar of a blog or on your website or in a blog post or something like that. And there was an admin feature that I had where if we wanted to have a screen, as I mentioned before, where we were displaying the hashtag feed up on a big screen for all attendees to see, and we had that trouble with the hijackers, the evil, what do they call them, the evil hashtag hijackers, you know, it was junk. We didn't want to see all of that in the feed. This system actually would allow you to block out Twitter accounts from appearing in the feed. So whereas if we were just using something like TweetChat or one of the other various Twitter feed tools to view the feed, I do not believe that those have the capability to block out a certain account from showing in the feed. So this would have been an awesome tool for that purpose. So it's a really neat site. I also recently just figured out if you go to the top in the menu bar, they have a hashtag directory. So you can look up hashtags for conferences, events, trade shows. You can look up popular organization hashtag, popular television show hashtag, and popular Twitter chat hashtag. So I do know, again, that this is not all-inclusive. There's some very popular Twitter chats that I participate in that I searched for here, and they weren't listed here. So I may actually contact those the organizers of those Twitter chats and suggest that they do get listed here. And again, I really do wish this site was more sort of more widely known. Maybe if Mashable picks it up or something, more people will learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be beneficial for there to be sort of a global database of hashtags.
Mm-hmm. I think you should submit that to Mashable.
Yeah, I might actually, because I mean, you know, it's not just convenient for us, but also to kind of know the meanings behind hashtags. So often I'll see people using a hashtag, and I wonder, what in the world does that mean? And even clicking on it, I can't really figure out from the context what it's about. Or if it is an event-specific hashtag, so many people keep using it, but you have to scroll back and scroll back and scroll back to actually figure out, you know, where the event is located or what the original website was. So to be able to come here and look at it and find the information would be really helpful.
I think that's great.
It's 12. Yes, it's awesome. So let's go over. Okay, here's another one. It's called coverphoto.paavo.ch. So I'll say that again. It's coverphoto.paavo.ch. And it's a cover image compliance tool for Facebook cover images. So recently, Facebook changed its policy on cover images, and it used to be that you couldn't have any contact information, you couldn't have a call to action, you really couldn't have any text that they would think could otherwise be found in the About section. But they recently changed it and took away all of those restrictions and basically just said you can have whatever you want in your cover photo, but it cannot be covered in more than 20% of text, which is kind of hard to judge if you're just eyeballing it. So on this site, in the field, that's sort of a free text field at the top here where it says 20% tool, if you replace that with the username of your page or the URL of your Facebook page and then click the button that says load cover photo, your cover image will automatically populate in the boxes below. And then what you do is you click on the boxes that are have text, and it will tell you if that text is, in fact, covering more than 20% of the image.
Wow.
Yeah. So I did a whole bunch of mine and found out that they are, in fact, more than 20%. So
when I
knew that they redid this, I did read that there is some sort of software that Facebook has. So it's not people that are checking this. It's a software that they're running through the system to be able to scan images for the percentage of text. So it's just a matter of time, you know, before they get to you. I don't know if they would send you some sort of warning or they would just kind of shut down your page without telling you. I don't know how that all works. But, you know, I do know that it's something to perhaps look at and maybe.
I have a feeling they just shut it down.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because, I mean, they don't have to be nice to you. You're not paying them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Susan, are you still on the line? I think she is. No? Nope. Okay. I was going to ask her what she thought about it.
Sorry, Deb, I am.
Oh,
I was
muted. That's all right. So what do you think? I mean, I think that's a pretty good tool.
I think that's amazing. And I actually honestly didn't know that they took down those restrictions for text. So my mind is noodling already on what we're going to do.
Oh, good. All right. Well, that lovely operator who I'm going to meet one day is telling us that we're down to just 60 seconds. So, AK,
right,
we're going to have to go. And, Susan, thanks for hanging with us as long as you did. And hopefully we'll see you again soon in person.
Fabulous. Thank
okay.
you for having us.
Yep. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And, AK, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Don't show me. Social Me, Social Me.